Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Fair Data Podcast, where we discuss all things fair, making data findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. I'm Rory McNeil, host of the Fair Data Podcast, and my guest today is Connie Clare. Connie is Community Development Manager at the RDA. Connie, welcome. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you, Rory. It's great to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Excellent. So before we get into the really interesting work you're doing at the RDA, which is relatively recent, let's talk about your previous role at 4TU, the repository that's managed by TU Delft. TU Delft is an amazing center of innovation around FAIR and research data management. And in fact, I think we've had no fewer than three or possibly four people who were involved in one role or another at TU Delft already on the podcast. So I'll include you as a fifth. Anyway, it's an amazing place, and it must have been just an exciting place to work. So what was your role at 4TU?
Yeah, that's right, Rory. It was such an amazing place to work. And actually, TU Delft will always have a very, very special place in my heart, because I feel really privileged, actually, to follow some of the other staff members at TU Delft on this podcast. It was a really vibrant, dynamic and exciting place to work, and the people actually made it very special. They were very knowledgeable and very supportive. So my role at 4TU Research Data was also a community management role. And I was actually really fortunate to work with the 4TU Research Data team. So as you mentioned, 4TU Research Data, it's an international data repository for science, engineering and design disciplines. It's actually a repository that's managed by TU Delft, but also in partnership with other technical universities in the Netherlands, such as Eindhoven University, the University of Twente, and also Wageningen. So I actually started working remotely from the UK, actually, back in 2020 during the pandemic. And my role was to build the 4TU Research Data community around the data repository from scratch, but also working with the other partner institutions as well in being able to do this. So the aim was to bring together diverse stakeholders. So these were data support professionals, so data stewards, data managers, research software engineers, data trainers, IT support professionals, as well as librarians. And on top of that, bringing in the technical team that were maintaining and managing the data repository. And then furthermore, trying to bring in researchers. So engaging researchers and trying to encourage them to use the repository. So part of the community, we had researchers who would be either publishing data or code, or maybe even reusing data or code using the repository. The idea was to create this welcoming and inclusive online community. And my role as community manager was to bring these stakeholders together and provide lots of opportunities to exchange knowledge and best practices about the creation and reuse of FAIR data within the technical science disciplines. And in doing that, also encourage the use of the data repository. But I was really fortunate to start my career in community management in the Netherlands, because, of course, you might be aware, it's a very progressive country in terms of data stewardship. It has 10 different open science communities. So there was always a lot going on. And I was very fortunate to start this community with a lot of active members who could help disseminate the news and engage other people.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, it's not just TU, it's TU Delft, but it's not just TU Delft. The whole scene in the Netherlands is incredibly vibrant, and there's so much going on. Could even seem a bit overwhelming at times, I guess. So, I mean, you clearly had a lot of resources, both internal to TU Delft, internal to 4TU, as well as kind of external or collaborative. So what were some of the key challenges you faced, and how did you address them?
Yeah, I think one of the social challenges, really, to any kind of scientific community management role or any kind of data support role, in fact, is engaging researchers, right, and trying to drive the culture change towards better RDM practice or research data management practice, because it's such an exciting piece of work to be doing, but it's also quite relentless, because you always feel like you're never really done and there's always quite a lot to do. And like you mentioned a second ago, it can be quite overwhelming because there are lots of different organizations, initiatives, communities, policies, standards out there, and you know, you're trying to navigate this. So as a community manager, that was a challenge for me, but also a challenge to sometimes, you know, make researchers aware of the importance of open science or fair data and using repositories to publish. Of course, there are many different policies and mandates within the universities, particularly at TU Delft, that can help with that. And we had the luxury of data stewards, who are the full-time support professionals that are doing a fantastic job in supporting researchers in their daily research data management tasks. I think one of the ways that I managed to really overcome some of those social challenges was to have personal contact with researchers on a regular basis and almost, you know, get to know them. And I would set up, I mean, I could do that because it was a quite a small community. It's a bit different with the RDA now. But at that time, I could set up virtual calls with them. I'd get to know about their research projects, their success stories, so what was working for them, but also about their barriers and pain points. And often I'd learn that researchers are quite overwhelmed by the fast evolving landscape of research data management. There are so many different journal, funder, institutional policies. As I mentioned, so many tools and services. Some are disciplinary, some are domain agnostic. So sometimes researchers didn't seem to know where to start, or they might lack some awareness of how to achieve good research data management. So one of the things that I would do as a community manager is, either if I didn't know the answers, I would try to connect them to other people within the community that did know the answers and that could help. But also, I really enjoyed, whilst getting to know researchers, I really enjoyed showcasing their stories publicly. So I would often interview researchers and, as I mentioned earlier, find out, you know, more about their projects. And I would write articles, and these were published and disseminated on the community website and on social media. And the idea was to reward and recognize researchers for what they're doing, and to give them some visibility, but also inform and inspire others to sort of follow suit and try other best practices, you know, try to follow some of those good practices. And I also just think I should mention another challenge whilst I think about it. One of the technical challenges, so not social, but more technical, that kind of involved the whole 4TU research data team, I think, is making sure that the repository and the infrastructure meets the needs of the community. So making sure that the repository is user-friendly, that it has useful features, that makes publishing data and code really easy. And I always like how the Turing Way puts it: make it too easy not to do. So it's got to be so simple that it's easy for them to grasp, and they can do it. And so there were various different projects that I was involved in that kind of assisted researchers with that.
Okay, yeah, that's really interesting. One thing you didn't mention, but I've always been curious, because in most cases, repositories are institution specific. So a particular university has their repository. But in the case of 4TU, as you mentioned, it's actually a collaboration between several different universities. Was that important? How did that work out? Was that useful? Was it kind of irrelevant? Or how did that factor into how things were going?
I mean, I think it was really great. It was excellent, actually, that it was cross-institutional, because it meant that the community, you know, wasn't just in a silo for TU Delft, but that we could also learn from other practices and help with the other partner institutions, really, and vice versa. We could exchange knowledge and best practices and align policies across different institutions. So I think that always helps. And you know, when I actually started the community with the help of some of the data stewards, actually, so the other partner institutions, Eindhoven, Twente, and also Wageningen, or member institutions, I should say, because there are different levels of partnership, they all have data stewards operating in some capacity across those institutions. So this is just an example of why I think it's important to think about things on a broader level than just an institution, because we actually set up and established some working groups that were primarily for the data stewards to come together. And these were working groups that we ran on a monthly basis, and they were about different topics. So we had a working group on fair and reproducible code. So that was for data stewards to support researchers in managing and publishing software code. We had another on privacy and GDPR, so how data stewards can liaise with privacy professionals. And we would compare some of the privacy workflows across the different universities so that the data stewards could learn how to help researchers who are working with personal or commercially sensitive data. And then we also had this third working group on engagement and education, and that was more so that data stewards could share training ideas and materials and different kinds of ways and strategies for engaging researchers on fair data principles and policies. So I think it's really useful when thinking about the community building aspect and the repository that we did have this cross-institutional consortium that were managing and maintaining this, because obviously it leads to more data sets being published, but it also leads to good practices being shared across the country of the Netherlands. So this is just like the example using 40 research data, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. So give us a sense of 4TU as a dynamic project, which I know it is. What were one or two of the main developments that took place when you were at TU Delft? And I'm not sure if you can, but can you give us any insights into what lies ahead?
Yeah, I'm a bit out of the loop since I don't work there now, Rory, but I can tell you like some of the developments that I was involved in, you know, from the repository aspect. So we, in the first year of its inception, really, the community grew to around 200 members that were very active members. So either users of the repository or they were instigating or initiating their own projects. So one of those, well, several projects actually involved integrations with other platforms or other services. So I can give you an example. I worked as part of a team with a researcher called Matthias Funk from Eindhoven. And Matthias had developed a platform called Data Foundry. So this was for storing, processing, and analyzing design data. And so what he wanted to do was integrate the platform with 4TU research data so that when a student design project was complete and it was finished, it was simple click of a button, you know, using the API to be able to push data and the associated metadata through to the repository. So that was an example of a community member who wanted to make a difference within their discipline and to help researchers publish data. We also, at 4TU, the team received the NVO Dutch Research Council Open Science Fund, which was a sum of money. It was a grant to work on a project called Jupiter Fair. So myself and some data managers from TU Delft, as well as a researcher from the University of Twente, so Serkan Gergin, his name is, we were working on developing this Jupiter Lab extension for seamless integration of Jupiter as a virtual research environment with 4TU research data. So again, this was a case of helping researchers who work within Jupiter to be able to quickly and easily publish their software code and also any data. Whilst I was at 4TU, another integration was with GitHub as well. So one of the features that we included was this integration with GitHub so that researchers could quickly and easily publish versions of software code in conjunction with data. Some not so technical developments that might be of interest. So I was quite good friends with a data steward called Santos Ilamparuthi at TU Delft, and he works in the engineering faculty, and he was really keen on developing a data access committee. So this would mean essentially appointing a body of individuals who have the authority to control and regulate the access to sensitive data or data that's published under embargo, for example. So that was more of an add-on, if you like, not so much technical, but more of like a social extra. And we were also talking about exploring the possibility in the future, and I'm not sure how this has moved on since I've moved on, but the possibility of offering peer review for data and code. So this idea that you could open data sets or code up to be rerun or reproduced in some way, and then that could then get some kind of badge within the repository. So this would improve the quality and integrity of data to facilitate its reuse. And I can tell you something that lies ahead that I think might be quite exciting. So it's now publicly announced, so I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here, but 4TU Research Data is actually moving towards, it's transitioning towards an open source software as its technical infrastructure. And this software is called Jehuti. It's been developed by the technical team. And I know it's been quite a long and carefully orchestrated process that's been governed by the head of Thor2U Research Data, Marta Teperek. But the technical team have all come together, and this is a really exciting opportunity because, of course, like anything open source, there will be many benefits for the community, predominantly offering speed, flexibility, and agility. So the infrastructure will be able to evolve over time and really adapt to the community needs. So I think it's a really excellent example of a community-driven infrastructure, and that will take place of Figshare, which is their proprietary solution that they currently have been using. So that's something to watch out for.
Okay, that's really interesting. Fascinating. I know it's data migration is a is a complex task. So that's fascinating. Well, thanks for the. Well, my goodness, it's publicly announced, but I'm sure it won't be known to all our listeners. So that's great to get a bit of news. Fantastic. Well, let's transition away from that's. Thank you so much. It's so fascinating about your time at TU Delft, and I think those things. I suspect many people will have heard of Thor2U, but I'm also confident very few of them will have anything like the, obviously like the detailed kind of insights you gave. So fantastic. Oh, so kind of moving, taking a step back and, you know, it's always interesting to learn about the background of people that are involved in RDM before they discovered RDM. And it seems like many people did have a life before RDM. And I believe you're no exception. And I think you come from a life sciences background, I believe. So tell us, how did your interest in research data management develop?
Yeah, it's funny, Rory, I can't remember my life before RDM now. but no, it all started during my PhD, actually. So I studied a PhD in developmental biology at the University of Nottingham. And my research was looking at the effects of different concentrations of amino acids and different nutrients on the development of embryos, and I used cow embryos as a biological model, actually. So my time as a researcher, a PhD researcher, was spent quite isolated, alone in the lab, doing in vitro fertilization, wet lab biochemistry, molecular biology, and a little bit of bioinformatics at the end. And I think, like most PhD researchers, I did have a lot of my own struggles with research data management. I didn't feel like I knew what I was doing a lot of the time. I was more fixated on experiments and getting them to work than actually managing data as I probably should have been. So I kind of muddled my way through, not really knowing what research data management was, but I actually came across it by accident in a way, because I was working late in the office one night and I was on the computer at the university, and I was on LinkedIn, and I actually saw this advert for an early career writing competition. And it was organized by Springer Nature, and the invitation was to write an article about the benefits and risks to careers of open research. And it wasn't so much the competition that got my attention, it was more this open research term, because I was like, what is open research? I was like, I've never heard of it before. And I was like, okay, this must be really controversial if there are benefits and risks to open research, and I need to know more about this. So keen to learn more, I decided to enter the competition. And by writing this essay, I was learning little bits about how controversial it was and the benefits that it can have. And I was like, well, actually, there are obviously, people see that there are some risks, but I was like, there's loads of benefits to this, and why don't I know about this? So to my pleasant surprise, I was actually my essay was one of the winners, and I was invited to attend a conference called Better Science Through Better Data in London, and it was hosted by Springer Nature and the Wellcome Trust, and that was in 2018. And I was part of the audience, and I was listening to all of these keynotes and lightning talks, actually, incidentally, from some members now that I know in the RDA, which is quite nice. But one of the talks was actually delivered by Marta Teperek on data stewardship at TU Delft. So this is the first I'd heard of TU Delft, the first I'd heard of data stewardship. But I was really blown away by this concept that you could have full-time embedded support professionals that can help researchers with data management. And I was like, I could really do with this at Nottingham. I was like, I could really benefit from knowing somebody that could help me manage my data. So in the coffee break at the conference, I approached Marta and I asked her if I could undertake an internship for 3 months in the Netherlands to get to know more about data stewardship. And Marta was really generous. She kindly obliged. And with me, she devised a project whereby I could go and interview data champions at TU Delft. So for any listeners that don't know, TU Delft also has a community of volunteers. These are the data champions. So these are researchers or data support professionals who spend time, actually volunteer their time and expertise to advocate for good research data management practices within their disciplines. So I actually went to the Netherlands for 3 months. I interviewed several of these data champions and we published articles to showcase some of the work that they're doing. And really, after my internship, that was the turning point for me because I loved my own research, but I became absolutely fascinated by research data management. And I was really determined to make my own individual contribution then to change research for future generations. I mean, I'm not saying that I can do this single-handedly, of course, but I was just really determined to come into more of a support role then. And that's how I got into community management and RDM. And community management is a nice support role, I think, within this RDM landscape, because I really like the freedom and flexibility that I have to be creative. And no 2 days are the same. I get to meet and learn from a lot of people, but I also can facilitate the connections. And that's what I like. I like to bring people together to achieve goals and to help people learn.
Oh, that's really interesting. So obviously it's been a very happy transition, and also, but it sounds like quite a self-conscious one as well. And sometimes it's more people just kind of evolve in certain ways. But in your case, it was a conscious decision, which that's also really interesting. So anyway, you are at TU Delft, the center of all the activity. I imagine it must have been quite hard. If I was in your position, it'd be hard to tear yourself away from TU Delft and for TU. So what led to the move to the RDA?
Yeah, it wasn't an easy decision at all. But unfortunately, there's no easy way to say this, really. It was just a change in personal circumstances. So it meant that I could no longer work for 4TU Research Data. So I actually discovered that I was expecting a baby in 2022, and it didn't feel like the appropriate time to relocate to the Netherlands at that moment. And that was what I would have had to have done to continue working at 4TU Research Data. So it was more a case of, I mean, I'm so happy, by the way, that I've moved to the RDA. It's a fantastic move, but I actually had to look for something else. And the move to RDA has been really perfect. I have actually been a member of the RDA as a co-chair of the Engaging Research with Data Interest Group since 2019. So I already knew about the RDA. And I actually first heard about the RDA from my former supervisor, Marta, at TU Delft. So she introduced me to the RDA when I was doing my internship in the Netherlands. And so then I attended the 14th plenary in Helsinki, and I got the vibes of what RDA is like and how dynamic and how amazing it is, really, as a community. And I've always been really a big supporter of the RDA for what it stands for in terms of its principles of openness, of inclusivity and transparency, and also the mission to bring stakeholders together to build the social and technical bridges to enable data sharing and reuse. And it didn't seem like that dissimilar to, you know, what I was already doing at 4TU Research Data, but just on a completely different scale, a much larger and more global scale. So although my role has changed, it's a different community management role, it's a different community, but actually the principles and the values and the topics of interest remain the same. And what's really nice about this move is I've actually gone from a community whereby I really got on with a lot of the members to another community whereby I'm meeting more people, getting on with its members, and actually some of those members are the same people. You know, mm-hmm. I met you, Rory, through 4TU Research Data, and I've now met you again through RDA. So it's really nice that I've also had the privilege of two fantastic supervisors in both roles as well. So.
Yeah, fantastic. It actually, as you describe it, it's easy to see why it actually seems like a very logical step in terms of your personal career and also in terms of your, you know, the way you're supporting the you know, the kind of developments and principles which you're describing. So wonderful. So now you're deeply involved in the RDA, obviously, and I know that I know you're putting together a series of events to help celebrate the RDA's 10th anniversary, which is big, very exciting as well. So tell us a bit about how that, the plans for that and how it's going.
Yeah, so I actually got to join the RDA at a very exciting time because, as you mentioned, this year it's a big year for the RDA as we celebrate its 10th birthday. And to really reflect on how the community has grown and how it's evolved and what it's achieved, because the RDA community has achieved such a lot over the past decade. So we are commemorating this important milestone, as you say, with a community by organising a series of international and regional events and activities. And the idea for this event series, if you like, the objectives are to reflect on the past and the present, but also the future of the RDA. So to take stock of where we are now, and to think about where we're going in the future. We also want to take the opportunity to reinforce our mission and vision and guiding principles, because these are really at the heart and are deep rooted in the community. So when we think about the future, we need to take those principles with us. And these events and activities are also an opportunity to recognise our community members, of which we have a lot. Also the group work, the various outputs and recommendations, and also our partners and funders. And I think importantly, by opening this event series up to a wider research data community, we're able to celebrate the RDA's success with, you know, a more global and a wider audience, which I think is really the important part. So each month of this year, we have dedicated to a specific theme related to research data management that we think is of relevance to the RDA community. And like I just mentioned, it's open to anybody. So we're inviting anybody that's interested in research data that might have an idea to propose a thematic event or activity to get in contact with us and to promote their event among the global RDA audience. So this month, the theme is Fair Data, Fair Software and Fair Hardware. So already last week, we had a really nice speed networking event that was run by the RDA US. And that was a social event as part of Love Data Week. This morning, we actually ran a community cross-fertilization workshop, which was really wonderful. We had more than 50 participants come together to talk about the future of Fair Data, Fair Software and Fair Hardware within the RDA community. Next month, of course, we have an extra special plenary planned in March. And then, you know, the themes go on. In April, we are going to be focused on health and medical data. May is a really, really big month. We've got lots of different activities lined up that are related to metadata and technical infrastructure. In June, it's about agriculture and environmental data. And so there are various themes going on throughout the end of the year, culminating hopefully in a nice celebration in December. We're yet to organise that. But essentially, we've got different activities. So it can be blogs, podcasts, webinars. We've got Ask Me Anything sessions, various different workshops. So if anybody tuning into this podcast also wants to get involved and promote a thematic event or activity this year, then RDA is the place for you. And we do have a specific web page for this. So there is a form that you can fill out to submit an event or activity. So lots going on.
Yeah, no, I think it's amazing. I think it's a really creative, the package that you've just described, which I won't try to summarize it because you just did, but I think it's a really creative, you know, approach and a really rich and approach to kind of to making the celebration really meaningful and also, which will no doubt lay the ground for future development. So, you know, thank you. Fantastic. It's well done. It's great.
Yeah, thanks, Rory. Hopefully that's exactly right. That is one thing that we do hope. And already we're seeing from some of these cross-fertilization workshops that there are some actions to be taken forward, you know, in the future. So that's always exciting.
Yeah. So, I mean, the RDA is, as you say, it's amazing. It's really now playing a central role in almost all the areas in which RDM is developing, just to name a few: PIDs, data management plans, research infrastructure, for example. So I imagine it must be fascinating to be part of the team that's providing a a platform and a forum for discussions around and development of these themes. I know your tenure at the RDA is relatively short so far, but do you have any observations on how the RDA, which is clearly a thriving and now in many ways mature organization, but it's also very dynamic. So could you comment on how it's evolving to continue to support innovation in what, when it started out, was just a relatively small group of people, but now is a large and ever-growing community and ecosystem?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's really important, just for any listeners that might not know about the RDA, just to really reflect on what the RDA has become, because it really does continue to fill a really important niche within the global research data management ecosystem. It's a unique organization, and it offers this neutral platform for the global community to really exchange knowledge and tackle some of the grand societal challenges, right? And I'm not sure I know of any other organizations that really can rival the impact and the value that the RDA really holds in bringing the multidisciplinary volunteers. This is a volunteer community, and that's really important, I think, to stress, that these volunteers come together and collaborate on such a large scale. At least I have not come across another organization like that. So we have a community now that comprises more than 13,000 international data experts. The organization is supported by more than 70 organizational affiliate members. There are 35 different regional networks who all share this common vision and really value data sharing and reuse. And as I mentioned, this is a volunteer community. It's grassroots and it's bottom up. And we've got so many different members that contribute to over 100 different groups. And these are the working groups, the interest groups, and now this new group, which is the communities of practice. And these volunteers are responsible for the creation and the dissemination of more than 70 flagship recommendations and outputs that are open and publicly available for adoption. So I think that's a really, we're talking about a very special organization and community. And as you put it, Rory, the community continues to thrive. There are some very exciting, there are some very progressive developments ahead. We will be revealing more about this, I guess, in the new strategy that we're working on next year, which will be launched in 2024. But just to give you a taster of some things that are coming up this year. So this year we'll be launching a new web platform, which I think is going to be making a big difference to the online community. So we're just in the process now of completing quite an intense discovery phase. So we've done quite a lot of the groundwork, but the new platform will be available for testing and deployment later on this year. And as the Secretary General, Hilary Hanrahaugh, she likes to say that we're moving from a Fiat 500 to a Ferrari. So we've got high expectations for the platform, but essentially this should give, you know, new features, new functionalities and new ways for the community to collaborate together. So I think that's something that will be extremely useful and beneficial to the future of the RDA. Also on the lines of technical infrastructure, we're also always exploring ways of being able to maintain the RDA outputs and recommendations, because that is really key for the future of the RDA. There's such a lot of high impact and high value work that's been done that we need to make sure is still available and is basically fair, findable, accessible, interoperable and reusable in some way. So we want to try in the future to continue working on this area and maximizing the impact of those outputs and of the RDA community work so that it can be adopted. And we're also, as I mentioned, with this new group that we have with communities of practice. So we have one community of practice already, which is the Improving Global Agricultural Data Community of Practice. And just to give you a bit of a context, so we've got working groups and we've got interest groups. The community of practice is slightly broader in scope. So it's more of an umbrella group and it's disciplinary in focus, and it serves as the coordination focal point for that discipline within the RDA. So the idea is that a community of practice has networks and has connections with external organizations around the world, and it becomes more of a focal point. And from the community of practice, new interest groups and working groups can emerge. And so we are in the process also of possibly initiating a new community of practice in the earth and space sciences, earth, environmental and space sciences. So watch this space. A couple more things that might be useful. I don't know if it's interesting, but we are also focused in the future, I think, on engaging early career researchers, or at least trying to bring early career researchers into the RDA community so that they get this opportunity to learn and benefit from the RDA's work. And of course, hopefully I can be proof of that, really, that early career researchers are the next generation, not just of professors, but also support staff. So we need to really nurture these individuals and this subset of the community to really help drive the culture change that we want to see. And a final exciting bit of news that I think might be of interest is today, this morning, hot off the press, we have published a special announcement that the RDA and Oracle for Research have just engaged in a special collaboration. So this is a public-private partnership, and it's a strategic priority of the RDA. So Oracle for Research are going to help by supporting some of the work of the RDA, so specifically working groups that will focus on the development of disciplinary data standards and also strategies for data publication. So it's quite fresh, but watch this space, because there will be some news coming through the website over the next couple of weeks to months.
Well, fantastic. Well, that's the second breaking story we have. That's that's pretty, we've had breaking stories. I don't think we've ever had two on the same podcast. Fantastic. Of all the things you just mentioned, the one which really made me pick up my ears was the first one, was the new platform. Obviously, the existing platform is, you know, it's functional, but it doesn't really add much value. But I can envision the kind of things you might be going to incorporate into the new platform, and what particularly I think would could be amazing, which I'm sure you're, this is part of it, is if you have a more modern platform, it allows more communication to take place and more effective communication to take place in platform. Because right mm-hmm. now, all the the working groups or the interest groups that I'm involved in, all of the communication takes place outside of, it's obviously the website isn't, doesn't support that. It's not intended to, the current website. But I can imagine that if there was a more modern and comprehensive structure which did support that, it would facilitate a lot more of the kind of bottom-up idea flow, which, as you say, really is what makes the RDA what it is, as well as innovation, more effective collaboration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, well, I look forward very much to seeing what emerges in that regard.
I'm really excited about that, actually. And also, more transparent workflows between the different governance boards that we have, when we have the review processes that we currently have in place for different groups mm-hmm. And for recommendations and outputs, this should also be a little bit easier to follow as well. Yeah. And for community commentary on these things, I think it'll be important to implement.
Fantastic. Well, you certainly you must have given at least five, I think, examples. So I didn't, when I was asking for some insights into how it's dynamic and how it's evolving, I wasn't expecting that much detail, but there you go. You really proved the point.
Sorry, Rory. So many things to share.
Okay. Well, finally, as you mentioned, next month, it's all happening, the actual 10th anniversary plenary in Gothenburg. So what are, and I know the RDA, obviously, as an organization is, and this is a big event, it's important, but from kind of your perspective, from the community perspective, what are your specific objectives for the upcoming plenary?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. We're going back to Gothenburg in Sweden, where the RDA all began back in March 2013. So this is going to be a really exciting 3-day hybrid plenary from the 21st to the 23rd of March. We will have almost 50 sessions that will be live streamed and 13 co-located events before and after the plenary. So again, there's a wide variety of different events and activities. So I'm going to be there in person. So my personal objective, I'll be involved in several different sessions and events, but I'm really hoping to go there and to get connected, in person with a lot of RDA's members, many of them that are going to be there in person, at least. There'll be plenty of opportunity for networking and for social activities. And there are some nice 10th anniversary celebratory surprises tucked away for delegates as well in person online, but I won't reveal anything about that. But just you know, I think the whole environment, the whole ambience will be really, really quite, you know, fun and celebratory. But one of our objectives as an organisation, and, you know, with the community in mind, is to, as I mentioned earlier, I think, as well with the 10th anniversary event series, we want to reflect on the past and the present, but importantly, think about the future and the next 10 years of the RDA. So we will have some opportunities during the plenary and around that time for the community to be able to engage with the Secretariat and the other governance bodies in some way, to be able to provide some ideas and some inspiration and some feedback for the future strategy to ensure that we are, you know, sustainable in the long term, and that we are also progressing in the right direction to make sure that the RDA remains innovative and at the forefront of research data management. So I think there will be a lot of activities centred around that during the plenary.
Fantastic. Well, I can't wait. That's going to be really a great event. Well, listen, Connie, this as sometimes it usually often is the case, the conversation exceeded my highest expectations. So thank you so much. It's been inspiring and fascinating.
Thank you so much, Rory. It's been great to be on here, and I hope it's interesting to the listeners too.
I'm sure it will be. So that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed the discussion.
I did. It was wonderful. Great to see you again, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in Sweden.
Absolutely, yes. So the Fair Data Podcast is provided by fairdatapodcast.org and produced by Mehroz Ahmed. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at Fair Data Podcast. New episodes are released every other Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. UK and 5 p.m. Central European Time, and late in Asia Pacific. See you next time.